Lately, I have been researching the idea of forest bathing. I have seen these books that advocate forest bathing for a couple of years, and I never bothered to open them because I thought they were talking about literally bathing in forest streams, lakes, or rivers. And though that possibility sounded great to me, I wasn't interested in enough to pick up one of those books and read it. Well, just a couple weeks ago, I picked up one of the books and found out that's not what it's about at all. Forest bathing is actually about spending time in nature, spending time in particular in the woods or forests, and developing a relationship to nature in general, but to a specific tree or trees specifically. Well, I thought that's something I could get behind, particularly because it is something I have done on a regular basis for most of my adult life. I probably mentioned, at least to some of you, if not in passing, then maybe in one of my sermons, about my soul walk. It was a 2-year walking spiritual practice in which I walked the same 2-mile route every day for 2 years, for exercise and to develop an observational relationship to what the land looked like, smelled like, and tasted like over the course of those 2 years, noticing subtle changes in the landscape and how those changes varied from year to year. The walk was mostly through woods and meadows. In the second year, as I walked by this same stand of trees every day, I started to get the feeling they were greeting me every morning. I know that sounds strange. But I have since realized that whether what I was feeling was real or not, trees and forests have a lot to teach us about communication if we listen. They have a lot to teach us because they know a lot about how to build community. I started being interested in tree communication because of my encounter with trees, but because I also started hearing about studies that actually prove that trees do communicate with each other and with other species in the forest, that there is no such thing as a lone tree that stands distinct and separate from other trees in the forest, and really with a whole interconnected web of existence with a multitude of other creatures, plants, and animals alike. When a forest begins, after a piece of land has been disturbed and then is allowed to return to forest again, there is a succession that allows a forest to grow in a healthy manner. There are pioneer or nursery trees, aspens, poplars, cottonwoods, that are the first to grow. They have a relatively short lifespan, at least in tree life. And when they reclaim the land, they allow the opportunity for longer living trees to begin to grow, and then eventually for the longest living trees to have a place to begin to find a home. And eventually, the pioneer trees die, and they form the nutrient base for the more permanent forest trees. And eventually, in older forests that are allowed to grow for centuries, symbiotic relationships occur in a way that wholeness does not mean the well-being of a single tree, but the well-being of a whole of what scientist Susan Simard calls the wood wide web, an interconnected web of trees, fungus, bushes, animals, infinitesimal creatures, and bacteria that create and maintain the health of a forest. Through a complex network of mycorrhizal webs of tree root and fungus, trees communicate and help each other, themselves and other species. The integrity of the forest does not simply mean that trees are healthy. It means that trees are in relationship to other trees, fungus, animals, and bacteria, and are healthy and in constant communication. Because, writes Peter Wallenben in The Hidden Life of Trees, a tree can only be as strong as the forest that surrounds it. Beech trees, for example, share all their nutrients with each other, So no one tree grows stronger or more vigorous than the rest. If one tree is not doing as well as the others send their nutrients to the ailing tree, and they all photosynthesize at the same rate. And I found this incredibly sweet thing, that when the trees grow their crowns, those branches that are the highest ones in the canopy, they will spread their branches until they touch the branches of another tree. And then they'll stop growing those branches because they know they have to share the space. And they will send more energy into growing their branches thicker rather than longer, or they will reach out in another direction. Trees also give out distress signals to other trees and animals by releasing chemicals in the air. When they are being munched on, they send toxins into their own leaves to make them less tasty. But they also send signals to the surrounding trees to do the same. And there are mother trees, these huge ancient trees that form the hub of the forest world wide web. They are the ones that are the tallest, that collect the most sunlight at the apex of the tree canopy, so are best able to create nutrients. They then funnel that energy and nutrients into the smaller seedlings that cannot capture as much light, both of their own species and of other species as well. The smaller trees grow more slowly, but that allows them to become stronger, so that in the death of the older trees, they can take their place by shooting up in the space that's left behind. And when these mother trees know that they are ailing and ready for death, they slowly funnel all their nutrients as they are dying into the younger trees. Environmental novelist David James Duncan writes of trees, "We marveled that the bodies of trees are built by their downward hunger for earth and water, and that their upward yearning for light. How wonderful," we agreed, "that these paradoxical aims, instead of tearing a tree in two or causing it to die of indecision, cause it to grow tall and strong." And he continues, "just as wonderful is how during a tree's afterlife, its former hunger and yearning transmogrifies into enduring structural integrity known as wood. Wood is a tree's life history, becomes something so solid we can hold it in our hands. Right here, in a world where living things die, a fallen tree integrity remains so literal that if a luthier adds strings to it, we can turn the departed tree's sun yearning and thirst quenching into the sounds of live music." We have a mission statement: seek, love, and serve boldly. This is not something we do by ourselves. We do it by working well with others, by sharing our nutrients with each other, by helping out those among us who are ailing so that they too can grow strong, by passing on wisdom as we age and honoring our elders. We take care of each other and are a resting place where we can rejuvenate together, because each one of us, like the trees, are only healthy as long as the community that surrounds us is healthy. And we each have a role and place in the growth of this community. Even the tiniest microscopic animals, whose only job it is to eat the leaf litter in order to create a nutrient base on the forest floor, we too have a role in sustaining community. This is all the structure that holds us together. May we reach for the skies and sink our roots deeply into the ground so that we too may form an interdependent wood-wide web, and know that to be made whole means to understand our interconnectedness. Amen, and blessed be.